Hello, everyone. Today's episode is a very special episode. You're listening to Creative Therapy Umbrella. My name is Kate Shannon, and I am one of the hosts in today's episode. You'll also hear Brittany Tachkoff, who you will probably remember from one of our earlier episodes. She is my co-host because in this podcast episode, we interview six other music therapists who are cross-trained in other disciplines. We've got social work, counseling, occupational therapy, and we really run the gamut with this group, which is so awesome. It's so great to get all this different insight. The best part about this episode is that we have so much wonderful content that I had to break it into two podcast episodes. So you're going to hear today's episode, and we're going to cut off after our second question. But we will be back next week with the rest of this panel interview. So you guys enjoy. Okay, welcome to Creative Therapy Umbrella. This is a very special, unique, and really exciting episode. One of the really exciting parts is I have a co-host today, and you're going to recognize her voice. This is Brittany. She was actually on one of our episodes before talking about hospice. So Brittany, thank you so much for being my co-host. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much for working with me, and this has really been an exciting and fun and creative project.
Yes, we've had to get really creative, which we'll talk a little bit more about. I love that this is so full circle, because this episode actually came out of an idea that you had when we recorded your last episode when you were on Creative Therapy Umbrella. Can you share a little bit about what your idea was back then, and then we'll kind of dive into what we turned it into?
Yeah, I wanted to consider creating some kind of panel around cross-training music therapists, because I felt like there was some community around it. And I also felt a little isolated and a little bit like I needed to navigate what this meant to be going into a master's degree that was not music therapy. So I figured, okay, if there's a way that we could pull on other voices and get other opinions and other people's stories to start building some community around being cross-trained, and what does that look like, and how can we support other music therapists who might be considering their master's degree and don't want to go back for their master's in music therapy. And really also validating that choice, that you're not alone in picking something else and in trying to find a different path.
Yes, I think that that validation point is so, that hits me so deeply. And when you suggested this, I was like, oh, that's genius. Like, yes, like old me from 2 years ago needed this episode so badly. And there is, and this is something that is unique, I think, to the music therapy field, in that since we're not master's level entry, many times there are music therapists who work for some time, and then they realize that they do want to cross train or want to get their master's, or sometimes an additional master's or an additional certification. And it is really isolating. I feel the same. Your word is perfect for that. I think when I came upon the Cross Trained Music Therapist Facebook group, that was probably the first time where I was like, oh, there are more people who are doing this. I'm not totally, you know, not totally alone in this endeavor. But those conversations, really, we still don't really get to have those conversations. And I think that your idea for an episode and a panel just really strengthened the community behind it.
Right. I also think that we aren't always talking about those other options when it comes to getting a master's degree after getting either the master's level certification or the undergraduate degree in music therapy. And so sometimes it looks a little scary. There can be a lot of different elements of identity, which we'll get into, and different areas around what does that look like for us as a clinician. And these aren't necessarily talked about broadly, or they might not even be introduced to us during our undergrad or while we're receiving our music therapy education. And so some of these topics I feel like are so important as far as really navigating professional identity and navigating what path makes the most sense for us as we continue seeking creative ways to be helping professionals. And I really do hope that those who are in that, either they're in the middle of that space or trying to figure out that space, can benefit from hearing not just our experiences, but a whole panel of folks who have gone through a similar process.
Yes. And it is really cool that the, and you'll hear, we're going to get into the intros in a couple minutes, but everybody there's a lot of different fields that people have branched off into. And it's really exciting to hear, you know, OT, social work, you know, traditional counseling or play therapy and all these different, you know, I would say related or adjacent fields. And I think that's the beauty of a music therapist, is we can really branch off into so many different places. And you're right that us not talking, not having the avenues, or not, you know, talking more about it in our schooling, it feels like a really important thing that we're missing, to talk about all of those options and how beneficial it can be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, to start, Brittany, can you tell us a little bit about how you found music therapy, or kind of just a little bit about where you are right now as a music therapist and your intro before we dive into the panel too?
Yes. So I found music therapy in a book of college majors. I had started researching colleges when I was in eighth grade because I have older siblings who were going to college, and I thought, okay, time to start looking. And I went through environmental studies was almost an avenue I went down. Psychology with a music minor, which is probably why once I found the term music therapy, it seemed like the perfect fit for where I was going. Combining my love of music as well as my inclination to help others. And right now what that looks like is I work as a music therapist in hospice. And we've been navigating switching between telehealth and in-person and kind of doing a hybrid mode at the moment. I also started a national roster internship. So now I am have been supervising interns, as well as in the last 2 years, getting my master's degree in counseling with a marriage, family, child focus. And I'm currently doing practicum at the same time as working as a hospice music therapist.
You are doing it all. I said earlier, I was like, it's an appetizer sampler of like
doing a little bit of everything.
We're cut from the same cloth. I am 100% the same type of person. And I want to give a quick shout out to your the AMTA Grand Rounds, the Music Therapy Practice in a COVID-19 World. You have a really cool video that's up on the AMTA YouTube channel that I didn't even know about. So we'll make sure to link to that in the show notes too.
Sounds good. And then I'd love to hear about your start in music therapy.
Yes. I also, I had a little bit, I think a little bit of a non-traditional route to music therapy, and then I heard about it when I was in high school. My brother, who is older, actually started as a music therapy major when he went to college, and then he ended up switching to psychology. And so I had heard about it, but I was like, I did not understand what it was. And I ended up getting a bachelor's degree. I actually got two bachelor's degrees. I have one in general music and then one in anthropology. And took some time off from school, and you know, I knew I wanted to get a master's, but was not sure how I wanted to continue. And went and observed with a music therapist, and my mind was blown probably about 5 minutes into the session. And I was like, what? This is a job? Like, this is so cool. And just watching her, the music therapist, just she was so creative and so energetic. And the way she was using music to support it was with adults with developmental differences. And I was 100% hooked. So after that, I went and got my master's at Nazareth College of Rochester for a master's in creative arts therapy with a specialization in music therapy. And I've been a music therapist since then. And it's been really, really awesome. I love working with kids and have since expanded and have been working towards my license as a professional counselor, which as of today, I think I might have 10 days left until my NCE exam, but I don't really want to say that out loud.
We won't jinx anything.
No, not at all. I've actually been enjoying studying for it, but so I'm at that point in my cross-trained experience. So what we'll do now is we are going to share some of the our panel guest intros. So they're going to share their name and similar information about what they're currently doing and how they found music therapy. So enjoy these next couple of snippets.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mabel Ortiz, and I work in hospice in Florida. And I have a master's in music therapy from Florida State University. And I am currently completing, almost done with my second master's in clinical social work. Fun fact, so I have a bachelor's degree in music education. But before that, I started my first semester as a chemical engineer major. Yeah, and then I changed because I couldn't stop making music.
So I'm Amelia. I'm a board-certified music therapist. Got my bachelor's in music therapy from Charleston Southern University. And then a year ago, I graduated with my master's in counseling. I'm still working primarily as a music therapist, but just kind of had that extra training, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more later. Fun fact about me, my last name is Lane, and my dad really wanted to name me Penny so that I would be Penny Lane, but my mom wouldn't let him. So then when I was an adult and I got a cat, I named my cat Penny. So we still have a Penny Lane in the family.
Hi, everyone. My name is Xingyu Yao, and Cherub is my English name. And I'm originally from Shanghai, China, and currently living in Boston, Massachusetts. I am a board-certified music therapist with two bachelor degrees. So I had my first degree in psychology with a focus in mental health. I was back in China. And while I was pursuing that degree, I was enrolled in professional training in psychodrama and satire family therapy. And then I came to Berklee College of Music to pursue a music therapy degree. That's my second bachelor degree. And currently I'm preparing to apply for a PhD in clinical psychology. And also getting my psychodrama clinical practitioner certification. And something fun about me, so since April 13, I've been uploading actually since 2014, I've been like creating daily improvisational music. Just for more my personal use, I never share it. And since the quarantine started, from April 13, I've been uploading a music video every day. That's like a music journal. That's how I kind of process everything going on. So if you're interested, you can find me on YouTube, putting my name, Xingyu Yao MTBC. And I would love to, you know, share with people and all the feelings I've been feeling and kind of have a conversation about it.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Oksana Kovalova-Musi. I am right now in the Kingdom of Bahrain, and I am well, originally from Belarus, but I live in Canada. So I got my accreditation from Canada, music therapist accredited, and I got master's degree in music therapy and master's degree in counseling psychology. That's my second degree. Well, actually fourth, but we will not go before music therapy for now. And I also am neurologic music therapist fellow and certified trauma integration clinician. And I don't know, fun fact about me. Well, before, well, I'm coming from the musical family. So I started singing on stage since I was 3.5. And before being music therapist, I was a singer and musician and all kinds of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Corey. I have my bachelor's in music therapy, board certified, and I have worked on both the East and West Coasts, originally from New York, Long Island, if you can't tell by the accent. Usually thick as a brick, so. I'm currently living in New Jersey. I'm actually working as a tech in a group home at the moment. It's been kind of a transitional period the last 2 years. So I was in a program, a master's program. I actually took a break from it for personal reasons and been taking this time to reevaluate a lot of kind of my career path and figure out what it is that really means something to me, you know. So yeah, looking into creative arts therapy, looking into counseling. Yeah, so give me a lot to think about, but creative arts always seems to be the thing to come back to.
I'm Allie McNay. I am a board certified music therapist. I have a bachelor's in music therapy from Chapman University, which is no longer has a music therapy program, which is a big part of my identity as a music therapist, actually. And I have just completed a master's of science in occupational therapy, and I'm going to take my board certification exam in 2 weeks. and then with plans to be licensed in the state of California. So, oh, and a fun fact. I have been a part of this wonderful community choir for the last, 5 or 6 years. Called Angel City Chorale. They're based in LA. We have about, 200 members in the choir, and we made it to semifinals on America's Got Talent a couple seasons ago, which was a crazy experience.
Okay. I'm so excited. Actually, Brittany, you mentioned this earlier that this, our panel guests, we just have such a wide variety of therapists who have done really different and unique things with where they're going. And I'm excited to jump into that in our next section. But it's really cool that we've all kind of started in this place of music therapy, and now we're all expanding into so many different things. So for our next part, we're going to talk a little bit about really the desire to cross train, where that came from, how we kind of grew into that, new journey. So Brittany, maybe you can tell us a little bit about when that started for you, that desire to cross train, and how you identified that that was the path that you wanted to go on.
So in working with hospice, it is a family-centered model of care, where of course the patient is at the center and also the family is part of the focus. So what support are we providing to the family? What education and what are they open to finding support in while they walk with a loved one in end of life? And through this family-centered care, I've noticed that I'm interacting more and more, not in an individual experience and not in a group experience, but in a family experience. And I started wanting to learn more about what is this family experience? What are the layers of assessment when you're working with a family? What is it that can hold a space for them? And of course, I did end up doing family sessions. And one that always comes to mind is a family that it was really more for the children than for the parent. and they didn't necessarily want to come meet the social worker on a regular basis, didn't necessarily want to gather in a family therapy session, and they would all gather around the bedside for music therapy. So while I was holding the space, I also became more and more curious around what was it that I was doing that was creating the safety for them? What was it that was gathering them to the bedside? And where could I expand upon supporting families like this and supporting and better understanding things like family dynamics that come up, or even mental health and how that comes into a family setting? And these were areas that didn't come up in undergrad. I went to University of the Pacific, and I do believe that really any university, when you're doing the undergraduate or when you're doing the certification level, you cannot cover everything. It's so they cannot cover it all. So I'm not putting that on the universities to add in a family curriculum. And I still had that curiosity around that. So I started looking at, and I kind of knew I wanted to get some experience, and then I would want to get my master's degree. That was already on my radar. I was thinking somewhere in that 3 to 5 years, and it landed right in the middle of that. And so while I was looking at different degree programs, I was having a hard time deciding between marriage family therapy, between counseling, between music therapy. I was really looking at what curriculum they had. And it wasn't until I started writing my letters of intention for the various schools that I noticed that really having that marriage family child focus was so important to my growth as a professional, and also had some avenues for creativity amidst working with families. So picking a school where there's professors who are play therapists or have that play therapy focus or integrate creative modalities. Talking with other music therapists who became cross-trained and trying to get some of their insight on what that looked like. And so I ended up landing on counseling with that marriage and family and child focus, because that was where I felt like I could expand my scope and better serve the population that I was most interested in. And really this idea where that interest is that multi-generational family. Where can we support all ages in a family that are being impacted by medical or mental health needs?
Yes, yes. I love how the framing it around like your curiosity of those things, of being in sessions and having like, you know, I just think of kind of something, you know, tapping your brain that's like, I wonder what this means, or I wonder what this would do, or that curiosity is such a driving force, I think, in at the beginning of realizing that you might want to cross train. There's a lot of curiosity.
Right. And I know you didn't get your degree in another area per se, but you are seeking the other licensure. So I wonder what that catalyst looked like for you.
Absolutely. And it is a little bit, this is actually something again that I love about this episode, is we're going to hear so many different perspectives of the logistics kind of behind getting a second or cross training, if it's a second degree or if it's an additional certification. And so how it looked for me is that I got my master's in creative arts therapy with a specialization in music therapy. And really what the program was, it was at Nazareth College, and I am so thankful for it. It was amazing. It was very mental health focused. So I had a lot of core classes that were traditional counseling classes, group therapy, family therapy, different things like that, that were just part of our general curriculum. And then we studied alongside art therapists, and then we kind of had our unique music therapy courses, and then unique different kind of even general creative arts research classes. And it was similar in that the master's that I did, we had, you know, art therapists teaching courses, we had family therapist teaching courses, play therapists. It was a really wide variety in that program. And then I got into the real world and I was like, wow, this isn't how it really goes everywhere else. Like, mm-hmm. I talked to so many other music therapists who are like, wait, what? You've talked with another art therapist, or you've got to, and I'm like, yeah, like extensively, and like done projects and worked very closely alongside other play, you know, art, music, so many different other creative arts therapists. And realizing that for me, I think was something that was just on the back burner, but was something that curiosity that stayed there throughout my career. And I found myself working in pediatric palliative care and very much realizing that I had a wonderful tool set with music therapy, especially with rapport building. But there were so many times where I had a kid say something along the lines of like, I don't want to play music today. Or I really kind of want to do this today, but I want to do it with right. you. Yeah. And then I was like, so stuck and kind of like, wait, I don't want to practice outside my scope, but I want to hold space for this child, you know, in the most intimate space of, you know, pediatric palliative care is such a tender, intimate space to hold with a child. And to me, it was like, well, of course I'm going to do that. This is the, mm-hmm. what more could I do therapeutically than hold that space for you? And so that's when I realized like I need more training in play therapy, because it was always a playful thing that the kids wanted to do, whether it was a game or, you know, bring in their stuffed animals and do some different kinds of play. And so I already had that introduction in my master's. But so then I realized that where I was with licensure, because my master's program was so mental health driven already, I was set up for licensure in New York State for their LCAT, which I do have, but not every state has an LCAT degree. Mm-hmm. And living in Colorado, they don't recognize the LCAT, but I was pretty close to the LPC, which is a general professional counselor sort of or license. So I was like, okay, I'm going to reach out to see if I can get that license. I was a couple courses away, took those courses, did additional supervision with play therapists. And so now I am at the place where I can be a general counselor and bring in music therapy and use all of my music therapy tools, but I also have this additional training and supervision in a more general kind of counseling setting, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I love that story of that one child, because it makes me think of the many other times when music therapy built such a strong therapeutic alliance. Yes. That I was the only one who could go deeper with someone, and yet I was coming right along the edge of the scope of practice. Yes. Where I'm working with social workers and spiritual care, and I would try and get them in, and the client doesn't want to talk to them. Not for any bad reason, it's just that the music is what was bringing them to that space, or the music was making them comfortable going somewhere else. And so bringing in someone else interrupted some of that relationship. And it was really up to me to hold that space or to follow them somewhere that wasn't strictly music-based.
Yes. And I think it is so important that we as music therapists, like, we have a really great power with that rapport building. It is something that I don't think it's just unique to music therapy, but I think it does happen a lot. The same thing happens with kids of so many times, you know, parents don't even want to sign their kids up for individual counseling sometimes. And they hear music therapy and are like, that's fun. It's engaging. It's quality of life. Let's do that. But then through that, you hold that space and you build the relationship through music. I found with this particular kiddo that I'd mentioned, you know, we started with a very traditional kind of music therapy, very client-centered, but music therapy relationship. But it moved to a new place, but we built it on music. And to then have the skills to keep going, I think is where my curiosity really started of like, it was that like, I'm reaching the end of my scope, but I want to keep going. Where, mm-hmm. how do I keep going?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, so the next couple of guests are going to talk a little bit about their experiences and with their desire to cross train. And this is super exciting because I think the power of music really comes into a lot of these of how we start with the power of music and realize how great it is, all of the benefits. And then there are sometimes, I think, where we do talk a little bit about the downsides of music therapy or sometimes the lack of options and how that can drive us to want to cross train as well. So take a listen to these next couple of guests talk about the catalyst to cross train.
It's interesting that I'm the one answering that question first because I haven't even, I don't think I've ever shared this with anyone or even put it out there. So I even had to write some notes. So I have my thoughts here and that I am carefully, you know, give you an answer from my heart too. But really, so about 3 years ago, I had the task, I was attempting to form a bereavement group, but it was specific to Spanish speakers here where I live. And I found many obstacles. Well, not only because of grief. I mean, grief can be a taboo topic or a topic that it's difficult to talk about. And the Latin American culture is no exception to that. But there were also other things that were involved that made it difficult and contributed for the group not coming together. And in that journey, I realized that there were so many gaps in services and support that people receive here where I live. But I'm talking about the Hispanic, Latino population. And there was a lack of resources and support and advocacy. And because I am from Puerto Rico and I mean, that's my culture, the Latino culture, I felt like I needed to do something about it. I also realized that as a music therapist, in my attempts of doing something about it, there were some limitations to what I could do. One of them is I live in an area where music therapy is not very well known. Just to give you an idea, there are only 4 music therapists in the whole county here. And we all work in hospice. They are my colleagues. There are no other music therapists in hospitals or schools, nothing. So I found that when I wanted to, introduce myself to organizations or do something, you know, I said, oh, I'm a music therapist. That already was a barrier because I needed to explain myself. And there's no problem with that. That comes with our profession. But it just felt like it was an obstacle. So I already had a niche to continue my education or to further it. And so that's when I decided to go into social work, clinical social work, because of the holistic view of the person that social work has. And also because it has some social justice component to it, the profession. And I just felt like it was very flexible, a flexible profession. So you can work in different settings. You can also become licensed, which is what I'm going to work towards, and have your own, you know, psychotherapy practice. So I just felt like that was a way that I could
just continue with that mission.
It's, I would say, a little bit similar story with me, because for 10 years I was the only music therapist in the country, and Bahrain is 1.5 million population. So I have to say I struggled to start my private practice. I was working a lot and advocacy and everything. But then time came to go back to Canada, and you know, preparing myself, I realized that with my degree, with my master's from Colorado State University, music therapy, I was not eligible to go to apply again. It's not license, but it's registration, which is a registered psychotherapist in Ontario, which is paid, you know, by the insurance coverage and everything. So that was my reason to go into counseling psychology, because the program was approved by CRPO, the registration body. And yeah, that's similar to you, Mabel.
For me, it's a very interesting journey because I feel like I was kind of born to do this, like to be a therapist in some way, because I grew up in a very musical family. My dad, he was working as a professional musician, touring, great singer. So I said, I heard my dad singing in the womb, you know. And then my mom, she's very passionate in like psychology, education, philosophy, like both in Western and Eastern traditions. And so I just grew up in that environment, and then I pursue my first, I started piano training at 5, classical piano training, and also later play with orchestra. And then when I was doing my first degree in psychology, I also was volunteering in different like nursing home, hospitals, centers for adults with disability. At the time, I didn't know there's a profession called music therapy, but I was bringing drums, ukulele, like, you know, we did those, we call it karaoke, but I was bringing my knowledge in psychology and also my musicianship. I did like bedside session in hospital when parents just came like, hey, please help our child. Like, he's in pain. He, you know, didn't want any contact. He's crying whenever somebody wearing white, because doctors wearing white, just passing by, they're just like, cry. So, but the child loved music. Could you just come and help? So I just like, brought in my ukulele and did bedside music therapy, help with pain management. And I saw the change. Like, the child was, because they had, like, he had to have injection because he just had brain tumor removal surgery as a 1-year-old. But they couldn't, you know, nobody could even touch him. So I was playing music, and then the doctor came. I was like, oh man, like, he just feel calm and happy and having fun, like, no. But I knew, like, oh, I need to keep his attention, like, away from the pain, away from the doctor. And so I changed the speed, I to get him more involved with me. And this time he didn't cry, he just, like a little and discomfort sound, but he was playing with me in the music, and they did injection successfully without any crazy moment. And so that was the time I was like, wow, what was happening here? Like, I want to know more. Like, I want to be able to do it every time effectively. I want to know what's underlying it. And I start to, you know, ask around and do research, and I thought, wow, there's a profession called music therapist. There are not only psychology, medical, medicine knowledge involved, but also, like, you know, there's a lot of neuroscience research behind it. So I'm just like following my curiosity of how to be a better clinician and how to be able to handle any situation and know what's the underlying theory and research. I don't know if maybe different program, different professor, but my experience at Berkeley is actually, I feel like I'm encouraged to pursue further education in other fields rather than music therapy. Like, I got suggestions if you want to do, because personally, I have the ambition to have my own business. So I had received suggestion, you know, pursue an MBA. So you got all the crafts. You can open music therapy practice and also elevate the field in another different level and create new program, like being very creative. And or like mental health, I have professor who's herself, she's trained as a speech therapist and music therapist. And another professor who's a mental health counselor and music therapist at the same time. So that's my experience. I got encouraged, like I wanted to get deeper into the clinical psychology. And one reason is I want to advocate for music therapy work. I feel like if I have a credential in clinical psychology, and then people were like, oh yeah, I want to listen to you. And I want to hear, I feel my words would be like, my words and my research will have more weight to advocate, because I experience and see so many benefits music therapies can have for people. And I do feel the limitation of just being a music therapist. It's hard to move forward with those advocacy. And the other reason is also, you know, where to get the funding, the resources. I feel another degree in clinical psychology or MBA, you know, that can really expand the practice of music therapy. And I feel really in some way, I feel like it should be, I know, like, don't shirt on yourself, but like, should be that way, like to expand. And for all the different discipline we take can, because we're a person, a human being first, and then a therapist, and our goal is just to help people. So whatever way and the strategy or tools or discipline we can take on, it just all to serve people. So it doesn't have to be like, oh, you are this field, you this discipline, you can only use this or I feel like we can be more like integrated. That's my.
So I wanted to share a kind of a different journey of going about this. I was working at a hospital that was part of a university. And one of the benefits of working full time at that hospital was you could take classes for free. And like, who's not going to take up free grad school? You know, like, that would be silly. And even though, you know, the whole time I was like, I really want to do is further my music therapy education. That was kind of always in the back of my mind. That was always my goal. But I had this opportunity for, you know, my courses to be paid for. And so from that, I looked at what they had to offer and looked at, like you were talking about, your own kind of deficiency. I don't want to say deficiencies, but just things where you can improve in your clinical work. You know, I noticed that I was doing a lot of more verbal processing, but I wasn't super confident in it. I was always kind of questioning, should I have said that? You know, am I understanding this correctly? Is this, you know, the way that I need to respond to this person? You know, how do you talk to people? I know it sounds like such a simple thing. We've been communicating with people our whole lives and we're therapists, you know, our whole job is about relationship, but you know, there is an art to this. And I just didn't really feel very confident in that art. And so counseling was an option. And I said, you know, this is going to make me a better music therapist. That was always my goal. And so I just went after it. And it was, I think, the most challenging thing was just trying to convince my professors that I was not changing careers. that, you know, I was trying to become an integrated therapist that was cross-trained rather than, well, I'm done with music therapy. I've done that. Let's move on to something else.
In high school, actually, I did a summer vocal performance program with Berklee College of Music. But out here in LA area, they actually called it Berklee in LA, but it was in Fullerton, so that's not really LA. But they had like current students act as like the counselors and kind of take us around and give us support and, you know, whatever. And my assigned counselor was a music therapy student. And she did like a little presentation for our group about music therapy and what it was. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I'm going to do. And so when I applied for colleges straight out of high school, I applied for music therapy programs. I kind of looked into other professions to further my education, and had investigated looking into music therapy master's programs. But I think in the setting that I work primarily in patient psychiatric hospital setting. And in that setting, as a music therapist, we serve kind of a role that has many hats. A lot of the groups I run are not music related. And so I felt the need to get more education about how to use some of those modalities in a more effective way. And also looking into, like, in my setting, I worked with a couple other music therapists who had a master's, and to be honest, the pay was not much of a difference. So I think that sort of sparked me looking into other areas. And I did find actually that occupational therapy also has kind of a social justice aspect to it, which also drew me to it. And I don't know, it's been very interesting because the niche that and the setting that I work in and that I'm most interested in actually isn't as common in OT anymore either. There aren't very many occupational therapists working in primarily mental health, although they, you know, they look at the person, like you said, in social work, like they look at the person as a holistic person and all the aspects of that client that they're working with. So I think there's a lot of similarities between music therapy and OT in that way. But the catalyst was more sort of personal development in trying to be the best clinician that I can be.
I wanted to end on that note with Allie. I really liked that last point that she made, that cross-training into another discipline is also a form of professional development. I hope you guys have enjoyed the beginning, at least part one of this panel episode. I am pumped for next week because I feel like we're just getting into the good stuff and then we have to stop because we're at about almost 50 minutes here. So next week's episode will be a bit longer, but in that episode, we're going to dive more into advocacy and identity as music therapists and how clinical identity shifts, as well as the different benefits of becoming cross-trained as a music therapist and moving over, as we mentioned, being the fringe of the fringe and branching out into other creative disciplines. I am wishing you guys all of the best. Take note that there are a few of our show notes, and one of those always being our anonymous survey. If you'd like to fill that out, please, please do. If not, if you want to just reach out anytime, creativetherapyumbrella@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. I really sincerely mean that. I love when people reach out. So always feel free to reach out. I just had someone reach out the other day and we had this awesome Zoom meeting and it was so much fun. I just love connecting with the community. So always feel free. Wishing you all the best and be creative.